It's time for JT the Brick on Fox Sports Vegas.
Touchdown, Patriots! And they're bound for Super Bowl 53!
It'll probably be Tom Brady winning his sixth. What else is new?
It's the story of a man named Brady.
Greatest player of all time.
You want to keep doing this through your mid-40s?
Yeah, I do.
There's no one I would rather have in a two-minute drive than number 12.
I have so much respect for him.
Ram fans aren't going from L.A. to Atlanta for the Super Bowl. You nuts?
You gotta go out here and kick their ass, baby.
I think we ain't done yet.
Yeah, baby.
I'm gonna watch it, so are you. We're gonna love it. It's an American holiday.
And now, here's JT the Brick.
JT with you. Good to have you. Courtesy of our good friends at PT's. I just got all the new promotions in front of me. I'll get to them. The best happy hour in town. Their big game party, what they have lined up for the Super Bowl, is second to none. Thanks to Sierra Gold, Sean Patrick's, PT's Ranch, all of the great locations, including the Stratosphere, Golden Entertainment, as we're ready to kick off the show. Dave Koken in studio on how to bet the Super Bowl. Smoking Dave Koken in studio. Howard Balzer, the Hall of Fame voter on the ground in Atlanta, coming up in about 40 minutes, so we'll get to that. Mark Patterson's kind enough to join us, former wide receiver who played for the Raiders and the Saints in the 80s, and this is incredible, his backstory here. Completed his sixth of seven major summits on each continent. You want to talk about a supreme athlete about to accomplish one of the greatest goals any athlete could ever have. Thrilled we were able to set this up to kick off the show. Mark, thanks for the time, and congratulations on your recent accomplishment.
Thank you so much. You know, I literally just got off Antarctica 7 days ago. The only thing down there living are penguins, and then, of course, me. And so I was able to take the top on Vincent Massif, number six. Now I set my sights towards the biggest boy on the block, Mount Everest, coming March 2020.
How'd you get into this as a former an elite athlete who played in the NFL? How'd you make the transition to this type of climbing?
Yeah, there were a couple things I think that played into the story. I think, you know, first and foremost, and most directly to your question, 7 years ago, I was going through a tough time. My dad had died of a stroke, and my longtime marriage fell apart, and it was not a fun time to be me. I felt very alone, and this went on for a couple of years in terms of, like, how did I get here? And finally, I just got to that point where I just didn't want to be in that place anymore. I really changed my mindset, and I said to myself, what am I going to do about it? And at that point, you know, all these ideas started popping in my head, and, you know, being a former athlete and always being that kind of gym rat guy of loving the process, I wanted to do something athletically great, knew I couldn't go back and still play in the NFL, and so I decided to set my sights on trying to become the first NFL player to ever climb the seven summits. And now here we are 7 years later, and so much has happened, not just, you know, actually climbing the mountains, but, you know, many other things have come my way, which we can get into, but just, you know, what a great experience it's been.
Mark Patterson's our guest. What was the most dangerous moment so far in the six summits?
You know, I've had a couple of them. I don't know if there's one in particular. I mean, you know, whenever you're on any one of these mountains, you know, it can get pretty intense. We've had guys fall into crevasses. I fell into one this last mountain in Vincent Massif. Not a big deal, but it was in Russia maybe a year or two into this whole thing, and we got into electrical storm. Somebody ended up dying. They got hit by lightning. And, you know, when that happens and you're actually in the source of the cloud, there's no place to run. You're above the tree line, and so everybody's scrambling, but scrambling to go where? You know, lightning can hit anywhere, and it did. I was on Denali 2 years ago in 2017, and we got into a superstorm, minus 80 on the top, and so we did not, we weren't able to complete that journey, so I had to come back last year and retake Denali and was able to take the top. But, you know, each one of these, you have to come in with ultimate respect of the mountain because anything can happen.
Is it cardio? Is it legs? Is it recovery? What are the big issues? Because we have a lot of people listening that maybe want to run a half marathon. Their goal is to eventually run a marathon. They want to get in better shape after the new year. They join a gym. They're all gung-ho about it. For you and the conditioning that you had as a former NFL player and looking to be the first NFL player to climb all seven summits, what is the big difficulty for you when it comes to training to do this?
Well, I mean, I don't look at it that way necessarily, you know. I mean, there's a chronological order. And for that matter, you know, anybody can take on any challenge that they want. It doesn't have to be big mountains. But I think it's as long as you put something out there and you have something that you're driven towards versus just sitting, you know, on your tail and watching TV. And that's kind of what my whole mission is about now. But, you know, I try to be the best conditioned athlete on the mountain. I don't know if there's somebody more conditioned or as in condition, but there's nobody more in better shape than I am. And I've done some things specifically around that to really drive that. You know, I moved to Sun Valley, Idaho. The base elevation is 6,000 feet, so I can acclimate in that way. I ski up a mountain every day to the top at 6 o'clock in the morning. It's usually very cold out. I have a headlamp on. And, you know, I think most people like to ski down. I go up. And, you know, but that conditions, it's like being on the ultimate stairmaster in the outdoors, going straight up that mountain, you know, every morning. It really conditioned. And, of course, lifting weights and then, in you know, during the summer, riding bikes and things like that. But, you know, I think it's just the whole core is just making sure that your cardio is there, your strength is there, and then your legs, you have that great foundation.
Mark Patterson's our guest as we wrap it up. You were a great college football player, a three-year letterman, and you played for the legendary Don James at Washington. You're in the Husky Hall of Fame. So this is a pretty important deal for you overall. The dream to be a football player, how close did it get? Obviously getting to the NFL, and when you decided you didn't want to go on anymore, was that the point where you knew you had to have something else as an athlete to fulfill you?
Well, look, I you were very kind, and I did have pretty good success, you know, in high school and in college in particular, and I was just always one of those fringe players in the NFL. I'd love to tell you right now that I retired. I'm sitting here at the Higher Regency in Atlanta at the Players Lounge. I'm watching a bunch of NFL greats come, you know, walking by me, and I was just one of those guys that was on the team, and we're all slated to be at different levels, but everybody helps. That's part of the team. You know, you need to have your backups as well as your starters. And, you know, after, though, I got out of the league, you know, is really, you know, what am I going to do? And it's hard. It's a hard drop. And I think the NFL has done a fantastic job of really trying to fill that gap now in terms of helping guys make that transition. But back in the day, it wasn't there. And so I did fall into businesses for a number of years. And then, you know, I've been pursuing this for the last 7 years. And by the way, if anybody wants to follow my journey, I've got a lot of things going on, podcasting, Finding Your Summit. Mark Patterson, NFL.com, and, you know, people can engage with me. I've got a pretty big social following and love to reply and hear back from anybody that's out there.
Finally, Everest is coming up. That'll be number 7. How much more difficult is this? You were at Kilimanjaro in Africa. This one, this last summit, I can imagine, is something that you've been wrapping your head around. When is it going to happen? What are you doing to train coming off the Super Bowl and all the appearances you're making? How quickly until that happens?
Well, we're talking 14 months. I've got to train, and, you know, I probably was in the best shape of my life to take on Vincent Massif down in Antarctica. I'm going to double down. I'm going to train twice as hard as I was training. I love the process. I think that's a lot of times what separates people is not just the end goal. That's just, you know, that's kind of icing on the cake for me. But I love getting up and that drive to go out and be the best that I can be and really putting myself in that best position. Everest will bring its own challenges. We're talking 29,000 feet. We're talking I'll be on oxygen once I get into the death zone, which is above 26,000 feet. And, you know, you're on that mountain for 2.5 months to prepare and put yourself in a place where you can actually successfully touch that top.
You got it, my friend. We'll talk to you down the road. You know, I'm in Vegas. The Raiders are coming here. You're a former Raider. I'm sure we'll connect down the road. Love to get you on my podcast after you complete this or right before you summit Everest, and we'll catch up with you again. All the best going forward.
JT, you're the best. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Mark. There he is, Mark Patterson joining us. You might say, why him today? Well, because Fred Sternberg, good friend of the show, who booked us for the Pacquiao fight a couple of weeks ago, pulled me aside and said, I want to get this guy on your show. He's really unique. Former Raider, and he's going to be the first ever, and he's going to do it, there's no doubt, the first NFL player to ever summit, climb all the 7 summits, and the last one is Mount Everest. And to hear what this guy does, gets up at 6 in the morning every day and skis uphill with a lantern on his head to try to see through this, that is a super, super elite athlete. I'm happy we're able to fit him in as we kick off the show. All right, the breaking news is Kristaps Porzingis of my Knicks was traded today to Dallas. To me, on an earthquake scale, the Richter scale of 1 to 10, this is a 9.3 for me. And I wrapped around this all day today. I'm a diehard Knicks fan. That's how I got my name, JT the Brick. It rhymes with Knicks. A little bit of a backstory there. And I love this move for the Knicks. Porzingis didn't want to be a Knick. Told him he didn't want to be a Knick. He's injured. He's not playing. And he doesn't like ownership and anything to do with it. You got to get rid of him. You have to. And they're getting a couple of conditional first-round picks over the next couple of years that aren't right now. That's going to be a couple of years down the road. But the Knicks today cleared $75 million in cap space to go after Kevin Durant. So that's the play today. Not saying they're going to get Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant and the Warriors are moving into a brand new arena in San Francisco. So what the Knicks did today is not only did they secure draft picks, they got rid of a guy who doesn't want to be there anymore. They're in a position where they're making up their mind about the future, and they're now the Knicks can clearly go after Kawhi Leonard and Durant together. They can go after two Supermax deals. If they don't get that, could they go after Boogie Cousins? Can they go after Klay Thompson? There are players all over the place that they can go after here. Now, the problem for the Knicks is they have the most dysfunctional owner in all of sports in James Dolan. He's the worst owner. So even if he's paying you this enormous money, you might just say, I'm not going to do it because I don't want to play there. I grew up in New York. I got New York-itis where I think, hey, man, why don't you play for the number one media market? Doesn't matter anymore. The Yankees are the only team, not the Rangers, the Islanders, the Nets, the Jets, even the Giants, where no one says, hey, I want to go play in the number one media market. Used to be everything when I was a kid. Now you'll go where the money is. You'll go where the free agent dollars are. But you're telling me Kawhi Leonard or Kevin Durant don't want to play at Madison Square Garden? But it's a rebuild. So if you're going to move there, you got to go with another max player because Durant or Kawhi would be nuts to go there by themselves because it would still be a rebuild and they wouldn't make the playoffs. Dave Koken in studio for the Super Bowl, and we haven't done radio together in quite some time. You know I think the world of you. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing fine. Looking forward to an exciting weekend. And we're getting into the best time of the season in college basketball, the NHL. It's not a bad time to be a sports fan.
We're going to have a lot of fun here. Let's discuss this trade first, because what this means, the LA Lakers put everyone on notice that they're all trade bait, which I think is very toxic in a locker room where every young kid who's 21, 22 knows that they're going to either be traded or they might be traded. But I guess in the world of LeBron, that comes with the territory.
Yeah, and they don't care about this year anyway.
Right.
If they make the playoffs, it's a bonus. They'll be out in the first round. I think they'd like to finish eighth, have a series with the Warriors, and they could say, maybe win a game in that series. That'd be pretty cool. But they don't care about this year, and they don't care about the young players because they're going after big names to side with LeBron. For the two teams involved in the big deal today, the Knicks got $75 million in cap space. That's what they wanted. And you just hit the key guy, Durant plus running mate. That's what they're going to go at. Doesn't mean they're going to get him, but they certainly are in position to make a run. And for Dallas, they've got two really good pieces now. And they'll be freeing up some money when Nowitzki retires, I assume,
yes,
at the end of this year. So they're going to have two pieces and will be able to go out and try and find a third piece to make their own run. So I thought it was actually a pretty smart deal for both teams. The risk on the Dallas side is that Porzingis doesn't get hurt just on the flight to Dallas. I mean, this guy's always injured. And I don't know long-term what his prognosis is as far as his body is concerned.
Already suffered a severe ACL that's going to keep him out for a full season. So assuming he comes back and he's 100%, they've had success with foreign-born players. They got Luka Doncic. They got some good players.
Doncic,
there. Maybe
he looks like a keeper.
He's legit, no doubt about it. But for the Knicks, I'm just amazed, Dave, because of your Boston and Rhode Island roots and East Coast roots. It's just amazing that young players now don't care about that. They don't know who Walt Frazier is and Earl Monroe and Willis Reed. There aren't many players that want to go play for New York, even though it's the number one media market.
And it is, but the problem is that it's similar to the Yankees and Mets in a way.
Yeah.
The Yankees are still in the running for everybody because they've been contenders all along. There are very few seasons where the Yankees haven't been in the conversation, even though they haven't been winning lately, winning at all lately. The Mets, when's the last time they were contenders?
They go back to 2000.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kids that are turning pro now in baseball were just barely born when the Mets were last contenders. So it's tough for them to attract, even though they're in a big market, because they've got no history. Well, you can multiply that times two with the Knicks. They haven't been relevant forever. So for today's young basketball players, it's New York, big deal.
Dave Koken joins us live in studio. Before we get to the Super Bowl, I thought this was sharp for the NBA. Over the last year or two, we've seen it flip, where the NFL's a year-round business, and now the NBA is a year-round global business when it comes to trades and free agency. Dave, what's changed in our lifetime is that the fact there used to be an off-season for sports, individual sports, that's when the trades went down, or we talked about the draft and free agency. Now we do it before the All-Star break, after the All-Star break, and we talk about players available next year.
Well, the NBA has two seasons, the playoffs and the offseason.
Yeah.
The regular season is basically an exercise and exhibition. Who cares about the regular season? The teams don't care where they're seeded in the playoffs. The Warriors showed that last year. They couldn't have cared less about being a number one seed, and I can't blame them. Their idea was to peak at the right time, be ready to go in the playoffs, and if they were the two seed, okay, fine, we're still the best team. We're going to win anyway, and I think you're seeing more of that. That's I guess, the downside of this, as far as the NBA is concerned, is the 82 games that are taking place right now really don't mean a heck of a lot.
As a handicapper, when we just talk about the NBA, because I think in baseball, you got to fight to get that wild card. Every game means something.
Right. I love their setup.
Yeah. Is it more difficult to handicap NBA games knowing that a lot of these teams are either tanking or they just don't care?
There's some guys doing well with it, but I'm not even doing it at all. I decided I'm going to wait until the playoffs to do the NBA, and I'm spending my time in college basketball in the NHL, where I think I've got more of an edge, although college basketball has been a little bit dicey back and forth. NHL's been really good. But I wanted to free up some time anyway, and not doing the NBA in the regular season puts me in the same boat as a lot of the teams. They don't care about it. Why should I?
Dave Koken live in studio. I think that's really smart and sharp to say. You don't want to go to your clients, and you have many, and say, look, I'm not into this 100%, but now I'm going to load up for the playoffs when I know that these teams are really competing hard. You love baseball. You're into it every night. I've seen you handicap with umpires, weather, rotations, travel, all lining up. What's been difficult or easier for you in baseball the last couple of years?
The toughest part is definitely the bullpen volatility.
Yes.
It's really tough to predict what bullpens are going to do from one night to the next, especially some of the weaker ones who just you can't hold a lead with these teams. So I'm getting more and more geared towards first five inning betting, where I can rely on the starting pitcher metrics and worry about them. And then once they're out of there, after they're two or three times through the order, it's done. And it's going to get even more that way now, because what Tampa Bay did last year is a new wave, so to speak. If you don't have a great rotation beyond perhaps the first two guys, go with these openers. Send them out there once through the order. You can screw up the other team's configuration as far as their lineup's concerned by going lefty-righty. Seems to be a good move. That was a brilliant maneuver by Kevin Cash last year, and that's why I thought he was the manager of the year in the American League. And by the way, watch out for Tampa this year. They got a pretty good team.
Dave Koken live in studio. If you have a question on how to bet the Super Bowl, 876-1340, 876-1340. We'll take your calls on Super Bowl props coming up next. We'll get into that. We'll talk about the game, lack of line move, what's going to happen in this game. I got a feeling I'm going to set him up nicely with another Tom Brady Super Bowl. You got a guy who knows this team cold. Stick around. Dave Koken in studio as we continue here. Howard Balzer. It's like a sports fan radio reunion coming up at 40 past.
They definitely have a great D-line. We're just going to have to hang in there and fight them out all day and try to be as competitive and stay balanced. So you just can't become a 50, 60 pass game and just let them tee off on you.
Tom Brady, welcome back, JT, with you, courtesy of the Henderson Hyundai Superstore, Boulder Highway in Henderson, where Frank has the entire staff to get the deals done. They have the super deals you're looking for. My longtime friend, Dave Koken, who I started with. I started Memorial Day 1996 at Sports Fan Radio Network. You were established there already. We started talking about the history of that network. We were in the last break. It was the best thing that happened to me because they just threw me up against the wall and say, hey, do 5 hours a night. And you were hosting the Pete Rose Show. You had your own show. Take me back to that time and what it meant to you being on a national network, which was the first to do it.
It was kind of fun.
Yeah.
And in the early days at Sports Fan, there were no other 24-hour sports networks. So we had some really big affiliates throughout the country. That was before ESPN got involved, Fox got involved, et cetera. Sports Fan was the forerunner and produced a lot of great talent, by the way. There's guys all over the country who came out of Sports Fan and are doing big stuff. Look at our old buddy Zach Zaidman now. He's got major stuff in Chicago. And there's just a ton of guys.
It's interesting you say that because when I started, the first night I was on and Bobby was running the show, midnight to 5, I was on KNBR, The Ticket in Dallas, EEI in Boston. And I said, this is the greatest thing that ever happened to me. I don't care if I'm on at noon or midnight. I'm on all these radio stations that are carrying the show live. We really had that market dominated for a couple of years.
Sure did. And then ESPN looked at it and said,
that seems
to be a really good idea.
Let's do it better. Let's do it with a real budget, and let's have real money behind it. Dave Kokin in studio. All right, tell us what happened when the Super Bowl line initially came out, how it flipped, and what you thought of it.
I thought the line was wrong. I tweeted at halftime of the Chiefs-Patriots game, line for the Super Bowl should be Patriots minus 2, assuming a New England win in that Kansas City game, because at that time it looked like an easy win for the Patriots. Turned out not to be. But I thought Patriots 2 is the right line, and that's not a true line. In other words, that's not a prediction of the game. I thought you put a Patriots 2, you're going to get – you can sit back on Sunday – if you're a bookmaker and you can put your feet up because you're going to be black on both sides. You're not going to, you might have a preference as to who's going to win, but you're not going to need anybody. They're not going to need anybody anyway, but I thought the opening line was off because it absolutely guaranteed an avalanche of Patriots money right off the bat, and that's exactly what they got. What they did was they put up an analytics line, and the analytics line for the game is roughly Rams minus 1.5, and that's what they went with. Analytics doesn't mean that's what the final score is going to be. It's just based on those models, Rams should be about a 1.5-point favorite.
So now it's 2.5 New England here, Westgate 2.5, MGM Mirage 2.5, William Hill minus 3. Do you expect anything to change over the weekend?
I think it might come back down to 2.
Okay.
And part of the reason for that, now that, again, it's a little bit different now than it's been because we have gambling throughout the country now that's legalized. I'm kind of still looking at it from the old perspective of, well, we're going to get a lot of Rams money on the weekend because the California people will be arriving in town and they're all going to bet the Rams. That's not the case now with markets in New Jersey and Mississippi and elsewhere. So I think 2 is the lowest it's going to get. I think 2.5, which is where it's basically been, is probably going to be about where it closes.
Total opened up at 57.5. Now it's 56.5. What jumps out at me with the total in this game is you always see, and we're a pass-happy league now. Everybody's throwing Brady's in the shotgun on every play. But I think the Gurley factor, Dave, really jumps out at me because he hasn't gotten the touches. C.J. Anderson's there. I don't know how injured he was, if they were protecting that injury. And if I'm coming into the Super Bowl, and by no means talent-wise at the same age, I can compare Gurley to Emmitt Smith and all the great running backs of the last 30, 40 years. I don't know if he'll end up being a Hall of Famer, but going into this game, he's got to be their best weapon if he's at 100% to keep Brady on the sideline and a little ball control.
Well, one thing we know, there's been a little pattern with Gurley. Now, we know he got hurt, and how healthy he is still questionable, but they had the 2 weeks coming out of the regular season to prepare for their first playoff game, and Gurley got some use. Last game, it was on 1 week, and he barely got used. So that suggests to me that he'll be in better shape for this game because, once again, they've had 2 weeks to prepare. So I would look for a little more Gurley here, but I'd also look for the Patriots to try and take him away.
But every time you give the ball to C.J. Anderson, you're not giving it to Gurley, who's supposed to be in the early peak of his prime. And, again, that injury concern is something there, and he's a big play guy. So he can make a play in the passing game, or he can break a hole and get out there and get you 30, 40-yard gain, especially against New England if he can break through and try to get that secondary covering those receivers deep downfield. I just think you want to go all in with him, Dave, and a heavy dose of Gurley, which could shorten the game and maybe take it under the total.
Well, here's the problem with that, though. I think the Patriots are going to look at it the same way, and I think the Patriots are going to say, look, we think Jared Goff's a terrific young player, but he's never been on this stage before. We'll dare him to beat us long, and we'll bet that he can't do it early on. I think that's what you're going to see from the Patriots' defense. I also think that this is going to be a sparring match back and forth early, where both teams try and establish ball controls, try and establish the ground game, go with the short passes, which are extensions of the ground game. So I think maybe low scoring early. But I got to tell you something. After halftime, I think they're going to start throwing haymakers.
I agree.
And I think it's going to be big play city in the second half, and I wouldn't be surprised if we get a ton of scoring after halftime.
Dave Kokin in studio, kind enough to have him as we break down the Super Bowl. Let me get Adam up here quickly on the Las Vegas Sports Network. Go ahead, Adam.
I had a question on the prop bets for you. Where do you see Brady and Goff finishing on the yardage?
Do you have the number there in front of you on the prop bet for the yardage there?
I was looking at 320 to 340, 340 to 360.
Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. It's a fair question because, as you're saying, you're thinking in the second half this game could get explosive. If one team's down, they're going to throw it more. But I always, Dave, I always say this with Brady. The last two Super Bowls, his passing yardage was completely over the top because he's always in the shotgun. He's comfortable throwing, and he throws these slot passes all the time.
They were behind in both Super Bowls because they were way behind the Falcons, obviously, before Atlanta screwed up that game. And that brings up the interesting thing about the Patriots is that you can argue they should have five straight Super Bowl losses.
Yeah, sure.
Because they were, you know, they were lucky to beat Seattle, I think, on what was a questionable play call by Pete Carroll.
Thank you.
And, and then the Falcons just blew it in the fourth
28
quarter.
28-3. That'll go down as the greatest comeback overtime. And again, Kyle Shanahan couldn't control that lead.
No, and it's still one of my fondest memories.
Sure.
Because I was at a Super Bowl party where it was almost all Patriots people. And let's just say the mood was solemn for three quarters. And then all of a sudden it's like, we're back in this thing. And if we get this to overtime, we're going to win. And they did.
Dave Koken in studio. I've been at the Super Bowl losses of the Patriots against Eli Manning. And those were fond memories for me because I watched the New England fans during the game and how uncomfortable. You make an interesting point. New England fans at the Super Bowl, when I was at the Atlanta comeback, they never enjoy the Super Bowl. They always, when they win, it's great, but they only have minutes to celebrate because these games come down to the wire and they're typically trailing. So it's never, Dave, an easy ticket. Hey, we're going to the Super Bowl like Montana. We're going to win by 30. We're going to celebrate and have some beers at the half.
This is, it is similar. You're a Yankee fan.
Yes.
It's the same thing. Yankee fans,
we sweat it out.
You're supposed to be there.
Yeah.
So it's not like, oh boy, this is cool. Let's have fun. It's like, this is business.
It's
and
business.
That's the way it is with Patriots fans. Patriots fans expect to be there, so it's not as much of a joyride.
The one thing that I think we should discuss here while we have a few more minutes is the game plan. And I know that the only thing that can rattle Brady, the only thing, is an interior pass rush. Because when Strahan and OCU Mignola and Tuck and the Giants were successful, that pass rush wasn't coming off the edge where they needed to chip someone with the tight end. It was interior. Now we got Ndamukong Suh and Aaron Donald, and that's what they do. Do you think that's cause for concern? Because Belichick knows it, McVay knows it, and Brady especially knows he's going to have to get outside the pocket from time to time.
I don't know, because I think what the Patriots are going to do is feature the short passing game, throwing to the running backs, throwing to White. I think Gronkowski in what could be his last game as an NFL player, I think that's a good bet over 55 and a half yards.
Yes.
Because I think they're going to look for him to get not big gains, but get 8 and 10 yard gains over the middle on quick hits. And he could have four or five of those easily at some point during the game. So I think the Patriots are going to attack in a conservative fashion where they run and then do extensions of the run with short passes. I don't think Brady will be going downfield on a regular basis.
The one thing I want you to remember from our conversation when you're at probably your victory Super Bowl party with all your Patriot buddies is that I say the key to this game is hitting Amendola. I was screaming when Kansas City was giving him 5 yards, not hitting him off the line. You got a tiny, undersized guy. Linebackers are supposed to be, or corners, get their hands on him. Hit him off the line of scrimmage, push him back, and then let him delay getting in his route. But the guy runs free, Dave, all day.
Edelman is, but he's going to the Hall of Fame.
Edelman, and before that Amendola, and before that Welker, they ran
free.
They're
all the same guys.
They're the same guy. And Tomlin was the worst at this, because Tomlin would just go into a prevent, you know, over-the-top, soft cover, too. I think the one thing that they have to do with Peters and Aqib Talib, these guys are trash talkers, they're rough, they're tough. Put your hands on the Patriot receivers. Make Hogan and make, you know, especially, and I look at the play of Edelman. He's so good. He's good because he's allowed to release Dave off the line of scrimmage.
And don't you think that you mentioned the two stars in the backfield for the Rams, but the one that can be burned, and
Peters.
He has been burned this year, is Peters.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
you can get him out of his game.
Yep.
You can get him out of a game like this. I saw it happen in Oakland. He loses his mind early in games. He's trash talking. He's looking to the sidelines.
Well, especially if the other team is going short, and he starts to get more into that end of things. That's when you can spring Hogan and hit a deep pass. So, yeah, look, I think they'll find a way to do that at some point during the game. That's why I think early on you won't see the explosiveness, but I do think so in the second half. And my projected final score, for what it's worth, it's just one game to me. It's not a big bet. But I Patriots 31, Rams 30, right to the wire.
31-30, another heart attack for New England fans on the edge of their seat, wondering if they're going to win or lose. Last thing, I just did a podcast on this. I believe that Brady's the greatest football player and quarterback of all time, because quarterback's the most important football position, period. We had Jim Brown on yesterday, and when I look at Ray Lewis and Lawrence Taylor, it's a short list of players, Dion, who could play both ways and do things. But Brady is running away with every record and every stat that matters.
The game has changed, because in his era, running backs were the most important player.
Yeah.
And Jim Brown, in his era, was by far the best player who ever played the game. And you can look at running backs for that generation into the 70s, maybe even the 80s, as the guys who were the most important, but they're not anymore. It's now a quarterback. The game is completely quarterback-centric, and nobody has done it better than Brady.
Dave, I love having you in. I hope we can do more of this.
Anytime, just across the hall.
You are. Well, you come and go, and I see you at Mastriani's, and you're running around town, and you got friends always coming to town. You like to head out to the track when the weather gets nice in Del Mar.
Come on.
Is that great? Isn't it great there?
Nothing better.
Nothing better.
It's a turf.
It's outstanding. Hey, that's Dave Koken. We really appreciate him coming in here. Howard Balzer joins us from Radio Row in Atlanta. When we return, your final chance to get in. It's our Super Bowl preview.
But I get the feel that the players are enjoying this, but I also get the sense they're ready to get going and start preparing and really locking in and kind of getting the finality to the game plan and getting ready to do what we're here to do, and that's try to win a football game.
Sean McVay, head coach of the Rams. We wrap it up, brought to you by Grimaldi's Best Pizza in Town. Get ready for your Super Bowl party. We give away the $50 Grimaldi gift cards here. If you're looking for pizza and the Super Bowl, only one spot in town, the great Grimaldi's. Howard Balzer joins us live from Atlanta off of Radio Row to preview the Super Bowl. And how many Super Bowls for you in a row or total because you love this game?
JT, this is number 39.
39. And it never gets old. You're one of the guys, you don't complain. Like people say, oh, I got to go there. It might be cold in Minneapolis. It was 24 in Atlanta. You meet up with your friends, you meet up with your colleagues, and you love the game.
No doubt about it. I've been doing a little radio, some interviews, and all that good stuff. And you're right. I mean, I pinch myself at times when I realize how long it's been. And, of course, the first one I went to was your team, was the Raiders. 1980, when they played the 1980 season, when they played the Eagles in Super Bowl 15 in New Orleans. That was number one. And it's funny, back then I said, man, this is only one of 15. That doesn't sound too good. Well, now 39 of 53 sounds a lot better.
Yeah, and speaking of that, because I want to get to the game, but you know how close I am with Tom Flores, and I understand and I know what's happening at this point in time. You're in the room. I don't expect any comment from you. I know Mr. Frank Cooney's in there representing or talking up Tom Flores. How competitive has this run been, taking a look at this Hall of Fame class that's going to be announced on Saturday? Either way, Howard, I think it's going to be one heck of a class.
Well, it is, JT, and you know the competitive aspect of it. Excuse me. That's what I say all the time when people say, "Well, this guy should be in. How come this guy hasn't gotten in yet?" All that. I often say that you could take just about any combination of five guys from that final 15 and say that's a heck of a class. But when you look at the reality of it, especially when you have three first-time eligible, strong first-time eligible guys. And Tony Gonzalez, Ed Reed, and Champ Bailey. And I don't know if all three of them get in, but I think Gonzalez and Reed certainly will. Bailey, who knows, might be up in the air. But if all three make it, like there were three first-time guys last year, that only leaves two spots for the other 12 players.
Yeah.
And that's not a very good percentage. And so that just shows, once again, just how hard it is. First of all, it's hard to get to this. It's hard to get to the 15. But then to get in, to be one of those five, is very, very difficult.
Howard Balzer joins us live from Atlanta, the great NFL insider, the Hall of Fame voter. As I'm putting my prep together for the game, I'll be hosting on SiriusXM Mad Dog Radio over the weekend. And the thing that jumps out at me in my notes is Gurley. If Gurley has a monster game like other running backs have had in the past 52 Super Bowls spread out, then I think it changes ball control, time of possession, sets up the play action, and it's a completely different game for me other than C.J. Anderson touching it and Gurley losing maybe 30 to 40% of his touches. What are you sensing on the ground in Atlanta on Gurley's health and ability to have a big game?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, and the health, you know, certainly he kept saying that there's really no health issues. But the one thing I wonder about with him is the explosive ability that he has. And C.J. Anderson's a really good back, but he doesn't have that explosive ability for the big plays that Todd Gurley has, whether it's in the running game or in the passing game. And you wonder, with the injury he had at the end of the year, he might feel healthy, everything might be good, but does he have that explosive ability? And that's one thing about New England. They haven't done it in the playoffs, but one of their big shortcomings during the regular season was they gave up a lot of big plays. And so that could end up being the difference. You know, Gurley, you know, if he plays well, he'll get some yards. But if he doesn't have those big plays, like I said, then that, you know, that evens the field a little bit. And so it's going to be very interesting to see, you know, at what level he plays in this game against, let's remember, a New England defense that, with Bill Belichick and running the show, that with that extra week to prepare, you know that they believe they're gonna come up with some things to slow them down. But it doesn't mean they will. I mean, let's remember, last year they had the same extra week against the Eagles, and they had a pretty difficult time stopping that overall offense. So I think this matchup with two really good offenses is going to be really intriguing to see, because the team that plays the best defense of the two is probably going to be the one that wins it.
Howard Balzer joins us from Atlanta off of Radio Row. We appreciate his time. We're having a Sports Fan Radio Network reunion. Dave Koken was just in studio smoking Dave Koken for a half hour with me talking about this game. He brought up an interesting prop about the over on Gronkowski. I think it was 58 yards receiving, 56. And I like Gronkowski in this game, not because it could be his last game, but he had those two big clutch catches late in the game in Kansas City, and I like the matchup with him going up against this Rams team.
No, that's a really good point. And I think, like you said, he hasn't had a good regular season. I'm sure he was kind of, shall we say, you know, he was dealing with injuries. And so you're always trying to preserve yourself somewhat during the year. Well, there's no preserving now. This is the last game of the season, obviously. And so going against, whether it's the safeties in the Rams or the linebackers, then I think that is, you know, a good matchup for Gronkowski. And so, you know, if the Ram, you know, most teams have stopped double teaming him because of the way he was playing during the regular season. And so if he singled up against a linebacker or a safety, then I think that could definitely be, you know, an area that Tom Brady is going to try to exploit.
In all the great years you've covered the Super Bowl, you know, Randy White, if you go back before that, in the first Super Bowl you covered, that was before when he won the MVP for the Cowboys. But I look at all the great defensive tackles and defensive linemen who have played in the Super Bowl and really tilted the game. The New York Giants against Brady twice, it was the defensive pass rush. This is a unique superstar at that position. Always forces the double team against him, can break through the double team, and clearly move Brady outside the pocket. If the Rams win, can you see a scenario where Aaron Darnold could be the MVP of the game?
You know, he would have to, like you said, he'd have to have that game, you know, with a couple sacks, you know, maybe a couple of tackles for loss in the running game. But I think that would also have to counteract with whichever team wins that they don't have an offensive player that puts up, you know, excellent numbers. So it's very difficult, as you know, it's very difficult for a defensive player to win that award. This is almost impossible to win it during the regular season. So I think it would have to be that confluence of things, if you will, where he would have, you know, great big play, you know, a lot of big plays, but where, so that would mean if the Rams would win, so that would mean that Gurley doesn't have a huge game. Or maybe, you know, Goff just plays well, but doesn't have, you know, tremendous numbers. So I think that scenario would be what would have to happen for Aaron Donald to have a chance to win that.
Well, I remember Dexter Jackson winning the MVP. Remember that one?
Gruden
Buccaneers against the Raiders?
Did Larry Brown win all
Al Davis got him after that. He was peaking at the right time. Hey, as we wrap this up, I know your time is valuable. What do you think of the commissioner's State of the Union at the Super Bowl? I'll start with the Raiders. They're still waiting to wonder where they're going to play. That decision hasn't been made yet. And the follow-up would be how the commissioner handled the non-call in New Orleans.
Here's the reason I don't think he handled it well, only from the standpoint, you know, obviously he acknowledges the call should have been made. What I don't think he handled well was when it was asked, I know Mike Pereira is a big supporter, JT, of having an eighth official in the upstairs, but he's part of the crew. He's not just the replay official, he's part of the crew. And that if that official sees an egregious error, one that's so obviously wrong, whether it's a call or a non-call, that he can, and it's quick, he can buzz down to have that changed. And so that was run. Dan Rooney has suggested that, by the way, you know, years and years ago. And Pereira thinks that would be a way to solve this. And so when the commissioner's asked about that, he comes up to me with the most ridiculous answer I've ever heard, where he says, well, that wouldn't solve it. You can't eliminate all mistakes in officiating. Well, obviously, everyone knows that, but you have a replay system as it exists now to correct as many of the wrong ones as you can. And so if that's a good way of solving that and would have made that call in that New Orleans-Rams game, then you do it. You're not trying to eliminate every mistake, but you want to at least eliminate the obvious ones. And I think that would be a good move for the league to consider. And I thought by the commissioner saying that, he kind of insulted a lot of people's intelligence.
What about the Raiders? Where do you think they play next year?
You know, everyone keeps telling me when I ask, it's probably going to be the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. So whether that means Oakland or whether that means the Giants baseball park or it means the 49ers, I guess it could be any of those. I certainly would seriously doubt it would be somewhere out of the area. And so that's the way everyone seems to think it will be. But obviously they got to decide pretty soon, and we'll see what Mark Davis comes up with.
You got it. Thanks for the time. I know how busy you are from Radio Row. I will be there next year, I can promise you. You're a good friend, and I hope I get a text from you, wink, wink, Saturday morning with some good news. Either way, enjoy your time out there.
Okay, JT, always enjoy coming on with you.
You
Take
got
care.
It. There he is. Howard Balzer, who will be in the room when Tom Flores gets the thumbs up or the thumbs down. That's my weekend right there. Said, told you, Bobby, I'm hosting Sunday on Sirius XM on Mad Dog Radio on the satellite network, and it's going to be a four-hour pregame show for the Super Bowl. But my focus is on Tom Flores, because if Coach Flores, friend of ours, can get in, we'll have him on the radio next week, and we can celebrate it. And then the Raiders will treat that, I'm telling you, from Al Davis getting into the Hall of Fame to Tim Brown to Ted Hendricks, Biletnikoff, Otto, Shell, Upshaw. I don't want to get too emotional here, but if Coach Flores gets in on Saturday, what that will do to ignite the Raider Nation, to ignite them before they get to Vegas, and the hype that will build and build with Coach Flores heading into the new stadium and the Raiders coming here, the celebration will be on. When we come back, my Super Bowl pick. Ooh, this sucks. I hate this. I hate having to do this because I make my prediction before the beginning of the year. And now I'm just going to throw out who I think is going to win. I'll give you the score. How about Dave Koken? Patriots 31-30 final. I'll give you mine coming up as we thank Grimaldi's and what they do for us.
It's unfortunate that litigation was filed prior to their final season in Oakland, but that's the reality. I'm hopeful that they'll get a resolution soon. The key thing on the timing is our schedule. We need to make a schedule, obviously, for the 2019 season. The sooner the better for us at that.
Well, that's easy to say, the sooner the better. We're waiting on the Raiders. Roger Goodell doesn't know where the Raiders are going to play. The Raiders don't know yet. They're still negotiating this. JT, courtesy of PTs, remember, as we get ready for big game Sunday, we can't say that dreaded two words. We have to say the big game. PT's got you completely covered. It's going to be the place to watch the Super Bowl in town. 50% off drinks, extended happy hour. The food is going to be loaded up. The New Yorker, the chili and cheese hot dogs, they have everything you want, from the bacon wrap and beer cheese, the Nathan selection that they're going to have. It's the place to be. PT's, again, 50% off drinks, extended happy hour, Sunday, February 3rd, kickoff until 8 p.m. So if you go there, all the PTs, Bobby, every one of them in town, 50-plus, I think 60-plus when you look at the size of PTs. So if you're looking for a place for the big game, that's the place to go. Here's my Super Bowl pick, and it pains me to say this. I'll be rooting aggressively against the Patriots. It's our right to do this as Americans. Unless you're a Patriot fan, you should be vocally rooting against them. Problem is, in Vegas, everybody bets. No one cares who wins. They just care about their bet. That's not my problem. I'm going to go Patriots 28, Rams 24. The Patriots win. They cover the spread, but the game goes under the total. Again, Patriots 28, 24 for a total of 52 and under. I think there's going to be some running. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But I think Gurley's going to run the ball heavy. And I think Sony Michel's going to run the ball. It's going to shorten the game a bit. You know where to find me if I'm wrong. Also, we're in hockey hell. We're happy for the hockey team. But they're kicking me off the radio tomorrow. Kicking me off the radio Tuesday, Thursday. So we're off a bunch because hockey is back here. But after the last hockey game coming up, we'll have an announcement of our new hours coming up next Friday, which will be really cool. Work, 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 work. Good to have it when you can get it. We appreciate that. Have a great weekend, everybody. VGK, the Knights are back. Go Knights, go.